Welcome to another episode of the Rockset podcast, Why Wait? The Rise of Real-Time Analytics. We invite engineering, business thought leaders, and analytics specialists to talk about their world, providing insights into what your peers are doing to improve data and application analytics. I'm your host, Gio Tropiano of Rockset. I'm here with my co-host, Dhruba Borkathor, the co-founder and CTO of Rockset. Dhruba, it's great to see you on this fine Tuesday.
Hey, good being here, Gio.
Absolutely. And before I introduce our guest today, if you do have any questions or comments on today's podcast, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can check us out at community.rockset.com or tweet at us at Rockset Cloud on Twitter. So joining Dhruba and I today is Jared Rossoff, Director of Product Management for Compute Infrastructure at Google, where he is building a new team for Google Compute Platform. Yes, he is hiring. Prior to Google, Jared spent 6 years at VMware as Chief Technologist and Senior Director of Product Management. And prior to VMware, he worked with customers as VP of Solutions Engineering at MongoDB, where he has also held roles as Product Head, Engineering, and founding a variety of different startups prior to that. So welcome to the Why Wait podcast, Jared. And thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Thanks so much. And Jared, you've got some East Coast blood in you, having graduated from Brown University. Are you you ready to come back and start shoveling snow anytime soon, or are you sticking on the West Coast?
You know, I my wife and I disagree about this, but I kind of miss the snow. I love Rhode Island. I grew up in Connecticut, lived in Rhode Island for a long time, and 10 years ago, we would have been neighbors, I think, up in Massachusetts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a bit of a snow lover myself. I enjoy getting on the slopes, but it's the shoveling part that really gets to me. But hey, what are you going to do? It comes with the territory. So welcome again, Jared. I want to just start off by asking you kind of what you're hearing from, you know, your customers, your peers, your partners about their needs for real-time analytics.
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, I feel like there's a number of problems that we try to solve with technology where latency is part of the correctness of the solution, right? Where the delay between some new record getting added to your database or some event happening and that data being incorporated into the analysis of that data, like you want to minimize the delay between that. So like good examples are like in financial services, you're building a high frequency trading system or fraud detection. And, you know, you want to be able to incorporate that market data feed in your trading that you're doing right now, not a day from now. Or like in building control systems, if you're trying to tune the HVAC system to get to a precise temperature or things like that, it's important that you do it in real time, not delayed by a day. And then even in like infrastructure, right, as we look at like problems like auto scaling and observability tools that developers use and SREs use to keep apps up, you know, again, like the importance, like it's no good to be looking at, you know, load data from yesterday to make an auto scaling decision today, right? So there's a number of these problem domains where that latency is critical. Like your program is incorrect if you take too long. At the same time, you know, what's incredibly hard about these projects is that there's really not many good solutions for them. You know, if you go, you could go say like, well, I'll throw all this data into a database and a transactional database and like try to query it in real time. Well, pretty quickly you run into like scaling and data volume limitations of a database. You know, you could try to scale up your database, but there aren't a lot of like scale out databases that could really handle both the data ingestion volume of some of these problems and the analytical queries you're trying to run. And so you say like, okay, well, I'll use some like data warehouse technology that can like scale out and do lots of like analytical query processing. But the problem is those systems tend to use like bulk ingestion, right? And so you're not like feeding events in as they're happening, you're queuing them up. You know, maybe you're doing micro batches and like and processing them every hour or something, but again, you're not real time. You're like delayed by those batching, you know, or you could throw it into like an event stream, like a Kafka queue or something. And you can handle the great, like long streams of events, but like it becomes really, really hard to query the data in meaningful ways. Like you don't have access to the full corpus of tables to join against and things like that. And so what ends up happening is that you have these programs that like have to have this quality of timeliness, and the foundational infrastructure on which you have to build them is really not suited to it. So they're hard to build and critical that they succeed in that timeliness function. And so this is a real challenge. Like, it's not like something like a transactional database where you can go pick like 10 different vendors, or a data warehouse, you can pick 10 different vendors. It's really an important area that people struggle to succeed in.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think you kind of touched upon the fact that there is this kind of software stack, which is very much like a real-time database, right? For doing analytics, where you need streaming as well as you need high volumes, and you also need real-time.
Yeah.
Now, talking about databases, I know you have worked extensively with Mongo in the very MongoDB with in the very early days. And I mean, it's a database, but it started from a more document-centric background, right? Where the APIs were very much developer-friendly, but not in SQL API. But when people mostly talk about analytics, people very much somehow associate analytics with SQL APIs in general. Mm-hmm. So do you think MongoDB or other databases you have worked with, the SQL interface is really necessary, important, or an enabler for triggering or enabling large scale analytics on these databases?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, Mongo actually released their BI connector, which, this was after my time at Mongo, but, you know, it's as far as I know, a SQL interface over Mongo. And, you know, I think that where that helped a lot was in terms of how you integrate with the ecosystem of existing tools. So if you're using Tableau or Cognos or one of those analytics suites, it definitely lowers the bar to be able to incorporate that data from Mongo into such systems. But in general, like, I think that, you know, the syntax of how you express queries is almost less interesting than some of the other aspects that documents bring to this, right? You know, for example, like we had a lot of customers at Mongo that were doing applications like this. And one of the common patterns was things like, you know, consuming a market data feed from a third party. So maybe you're taking, you know, market data from stock transactions, or maybe you're, you know, ingesting like the Twitter fire hose or something like this. And the problem with these systems, like when you use traditional databases, at least, is that like what would happen is the source of that stream would change their schema on Wednesday, add a new field, add a new property, deprecate some other property or something. And the problem is if you had really strict schema enforcement, all of a sudden your consumption of that stream would grind to a halt, and then you had to go like update it. And so like documents were really useful there, because you could kind of say, you could have a partial schema. You say, hey, this is a bag of JSON properties, and there's only a subset of these properties that I actually care about to query on. And all those extra ones could still be stored in the database, so that like next week, if you go update your query to incorporate some new field that was introduced the previous week, you still had that data from the previous week, and you could run that like back analysis. And so, you know, that's an example from like stream processing. But in general, I think one of the things that's happening in the database market is that, you know, all the database vendors are starting to incorporate document structures into their databases. Like, you got Postgres adding JSON support. There's like Cosmos DB and Azure, and, you know, even Oracle's like adding JSON support. Like, it's just a good idea. Now, whether the syntax of it is like Mongo's JSON like query syntax or SQL, I think what everybody's trying to do is figure out how to incorporate that, you know, sort of partial schema specialization kind of model into their databases. And so SQL becomes important for compatibility with those external tools. I think SQL is especially important to folks like Postgres and Oracle, who are trying to fit document data into their existing databases. But there's also like a whole class of systems where the consumption of analytical data is not like a BI tool. Like, for example, if you're in Kubernetes trying to write an autoscaler, right? You have a piece of software that's trying to gain real-time view into the load on all of your containers and try to scale up and down. And so there, like, I mean, you're programmatically accessing it. I think that SQL interface is less and less of a barrier to when you're trying to, say, make it work with Tableau.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you. I'd love to talk a little bit more about Kubernetes in as part of this podcast. But before we get there, the reason I mentioned SQL is because I think a lot of users, they get the benefit of SQL only when SQL supports joins. So what I tell people, when I'm talking to people, I say that, hey, SQL is not SQL unless you support joins. So it's less of the syntax and more of the semantics or the power of the complexity of the queries that you can express. But what I have seen is that when people use SQL or some other complex language to process, they delegate a lot of computation to the database, right? So if the database is not a key value store, you can express, you can have a very expressive language to tell the database to do more work than less. Mm-hmm. So the applications do less work and the database does more. And what I'm seeing in some users is that now the database systems that support SQL, they spend a lot of resources in the compute part of the database rather than the storage side of the database, right? Also in the cloud, storage is becoming relatively cheaper and more like a commodity where you can store petabytes of data cheaply enough. So what are your thoughts on where databases are going to be more and more compute optimized? And that's the thing that somebody who is trying to use a database should look for, or should they continue to look at the storage side of things of the database?
Well, ultimately, they're both important, right? But I think that, like, you know, if you look at the long history of databases, and you know, this has been a theme, I think, since like the 60s, right? Like, you started off with like navigational databases, and you basically like followed pointers around to blocks on disk. And, you know, people wrote their own query engines and indexing engines on top of that. And then, you know, there was the next generation of the relational stores where they said, hey, we can take you know, that query processing and optimization and joins, and we can do that in the database. And so now what you've done is you've taken all that computation that was part of the user's program and put it into the database and given it more freedom to like optimize and, you know, do that processing. And, you know, we've lived for a long time where you had like the next, on top of that, people would build like web apps or, you know, things on top of that. And so you had this whole thing of like 4GL, like fourth generation languages, were like, hey, on top of those SQL queries, like I can start to include logic statements and conditional expressions and like multi-statement transactions. And so you had like yet another tier sort of collapsing into the database. And so if I look at like this space today, like I always look at any platform and look at like, what's the layer of software that's getting written right on top of it? Because you can bet that that's the layer that's going to start collapsing into the platform over time. And so now you look at that and you see, you know, tools like Spark and Dremel and, you know, things like Airflow, where we're, you know, it's the same database, right? But now I'm doing these complex, like multi-step workflows where, you know, we generate lots of intermediate data and lots of intermediate processing. And so there, and you look at like the number of CPU cycles that are going on, you know, Spark is huge. Like you do lots of computation over the relatively same amount of data that you would have had in the past. So absolutely, I see like the compute costs are growing, and I expect that to only grow over time. Now, storage is also important, right? Like obviously the blocks that you have to store is dependent on the volume of data, but you also run into limitations of like IOPS and things of like how many times does that computation have to read the data off of a disk drive? Right. And so like in a perfect world, you could kind of scale those three things, like the volume of storage, the IO rate, and the computation cycles devoted to it independently. Now, for a long time, databases didn't do that. Like you bought integrated database machines that like combined the disk drives and the IO controllers and the CPUs all together. And so then you'd end up in these situations where you had to buy 100 servers just to have enough CPUs to do the processing, and most of the disks were empty, or you had to like buy lots and lots of disks to get enough IOs to do your workload. But you know, because you were in a scale out system, you had to buy lots of processors along with them. And so one of the things that's super interesting in cloud is the emergence of this independent scaling of compute, IOs, and storage, and the idea that you don't have to like waste money on resources that you're systems not actually using, and you can scale any part of the system independently of the others.
So Jared, this is the part of the podcast where we like to get your advice, right? We love the answers that we're getting when it comes to this one question, right? Because they almost seem to, it's always like the same, like very similar. So what's the one piece of advice that you would give to engineering leaders that are embarking on a real-time analytics initiative? And then after this, we'll get to the Kubernetes portion.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, one piece of advice. These projects, you set off on a mission to accomplish some goal. I want this chart, I want this report, or I want this whatever function. Very quickly, those projects today can turn into building your own database, right? And like, I would caution leaders against that, or not against that, but know what you're getting into. Like be clear on the actual thing you want to get out of this project. And if your problem domain and problem is large enough that it warrants building your own database, like admit that up front, that we're going to go build a database and then use that database to solve this problem you asked us to solve. But if your problem domain is not that big, like if it's like, hey, I want to know how many people are in my store at any given point in time, like acknowledge that, say, we're not going to build a database. We're going to use something off the shelf. And for 99% of people, building a database is absolutely the wrong choice, right? Like, I mean, you know, like Drew, you're at Facebook, right? For Facebook, yeah, build your own database. Totally makes sense. If you have the wherewithal to do that, but keep in mind that you have to have enough use cases for that to justify that investment. And it's going to take you 10 years before it's any good. So yeah, that's my biggest piece of advice is know what problem you're trying to solve and upfront acknowledge like we're building our own database to do this, or we're not building our own database to do this. And most of the time you should not be building your own database.
Yeah, building a database is like sometimes a superhuman effort, right? You need a combination of many things to make it work well. Yeah. But yeah, talking about Facebook, you also work on a big company like called VMware, right? Where you led a lot of the Kubernetes development effort there. Mm-hmm. At Rockset also, we use Kubernetes a lot because our distributed system database that we build is also deployed on a Kubernetes platform. But tell me a little bit about the real-time analytics needs of such a kind of a back-end piece of software, right? Kubernetes has many pods, so you might need to find, detect anomalies or detect pieces of your software that's not working well and then repair it in real-time. So how important is it for kind of a real-time analytics system that can find this proactively? Yep. Find faults and find anomalies proactively and then try to fix them in real time? And how important is it for it, and how challenging is it to build these kind of software?
Yeah. So it's interesting, right? Because there's an analog here to the evolution of databases where you had these, the evolution from sort of strict, strong consistency relational databases to like eventually consistent systems, right? And in that transition, you gained a lot of schema flexibility and scale and performance benefits and things like that. In many ways, like the evolution from like traditional infrastructure as a service to Kubernetes is very similar in that with the infrastructure as a service, it's like the relational transactional database. You say like start these 5 VMs, and then you've got like a reasonable degree of certainty that those 5 VMs are going to stick around for a long time. Kubernetes is different. It's like desired state. You're like, I want there to be 100 pods. And over the course of the day, there might be 105 or 90 or 20, right? And the system's like constantly trying to converge the actual state with the real state. And so like right at the heart of Kubernetes, without you writing any code or doing anything, is this real-time analytics system. The whole controller loop inside of Kubernetes is like trying to write these little control loops that have real-time view into the state of the world so that they can make fast decisions about how to converge the system with your desired state. So, you know, before you even add anything to that, like the core of Kubernetes is that. And I think one of the biggest failure modes of people, organizations trying to adopt Kubernetes is trying to treat it like a transactional system. That if I say, let there be 100 pods, that like magically there's going to be 100 pods. So like as soon as you start using Kubernetes, what you find is that all your SREs and DevOps teams need that real-time view. They need to see like what is the load on all the hosts in the cluster right now? And did I just lose 3 of them? And you know, there's now too much CPU going on all the rest. Or like I'm trying to scale up this new deployment and it's getting stuck. Like where is it getting stuck? There's hundreds of pods getting started. Is it failing to load the container image? Is it running out of capacity? Is it run out of like IP addresses or something like that? So like in order to be able to operate a Kubernetes cluster, you have to like embrace that desired state, embrace the like sort of constant chaos and these control loops kind of fighting with each other to converge to the real state. And the only way you can do that is to like stop pretending that it's a transactional system and try looking at the real-time state of what's actually going on. And then that then gets to the next level of, like, as an application team deploying your application on Kubernetes, you also have to embrace that model. You have to, you know, oftentimes there's features of your application that require this. Like, I always come back to, like, auto scaling, right? Like, auto scaling, like, we would love for there to be, like, a generic auto scaling implementation that we all use. But in my experience, like, every auto scaler I've ever seen has been incredibly application specific. Like, it's not good enough to just say, look at my instantaneous CPU load and, like, add or remove capacity based on that. It's more often than not, you're looking at, like, a weighted history of the last 2 weeks of load and trying to detect diurnal patterns and, you know, hooking into, like, application specific metrics. Like, what is a, you know, in Facebook, like, what is a page view, right? How do we count those and, like, size for that? And so as soon as you start to implement a feature like that, you're writing a little real-time analytics control loop to do your auto-scaling group, right? And so are you building a database to do that? Like, I hope not. I hope you're, like, using something off the shelf to make it hard, to make it easier. But yeah, we find that across. It's sort of part of Kubernetes itself. It's part of operating Kubernetes. And I think for application teams deploying on Kubernetes, you see all this investment in observability, right? What is observability? It's real-time analytics of what's going on inside my deployment right now.
Awesome. Well, Jared, that will do it for this episode of the Rockset Real-Time Analytics Podcast. I'd like to thank you for joining us. And Dhruba, thank you for being here as well. Jared, is there anything that you'd like to promote? I know that you mentioned that, you know, you're hiring, but is there anything that you'd like to promote prior to adjourning?
No, I am hiring. You know, if you're a product manager interested in real-time systems and distributed systems, we're hiring at Google, and give me a call.
Awesome. Awesome. And if you found today's episode insightful, please share the episode. Help us share these insights with your peers. The Why Wait Real-Time Analytics Podcast is brought to you by Rockset, where we are building a real-time analytics cloud-based platform. Check us out at rockset.com. You can actually try real-time analytics tools for free today for 2 weeks with a $300 free trial credit. So thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for our next episode.